Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3
FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Michael Hawley is back from the coronation. How was it?
Great, Al. At the coronation, I watched it from Buffalo.
I thought you were there. I thought you were one of the personal
branches. I actually am supposed to go there in the summer for, Unsolved Mysteries has asked me to do some stuff. So, but it's wrong timing. I wish it was right during the coronation.
Well, I thought King Charles actually invited you.
Yeah, he did. I just said no, because the Pope asked me to go somewhere else, and I just, I didn't.
Pope King. Yeah, but, you were supposed to carry his train. He had a longer train than most women at a bride, in wedding.
I loved it. I loved that carriage, whatever, that gold thing. That was awesome.
But, next we'll have Kid Rock shooting up a British beer because the king was wearing makeup in a train. Oh, I tell you, that's crazy. Crazy world out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of crazy, we've got a writer, returning writer, and I guess we call him science fiction, and his new book.
Sci-fi thriller, right?
Sci-fi thriller, yes. This is the one that keeps you going. His new book is called The Price of Rebellion, and it's, of course, book two in his Price of Trilogy series, Michael C. Bland. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Nice speaking with you.
Michael, when you're doing a series like this, when you have a book one and some things happen and stuff like that, did you know ahead of time you were going to be doing a book two and knew what you wanted to do? Is this kind of all planned as a series, or does it just happen afterwards?
Not initially, at least when I was planning the first book. But the way that the first one ended, it opened up a bigger world. It's a complete story, the first one, but it opened it up. Kind of my really bad analogy is like the movie The Matrix, the first one. Where, Neo goes through, becomes the one. And at the end, after defeating the agent, he then gets in the phone booth and goes, hey, this is going to be really interesting to see what happens next, right? Well, that's what, as I was writing the first book, that's the ending I kept getting to, was there's a bigger world that I've created, whether I consciously planned it or not. So after the first one was done, then I started mapping out books two and book three, and everything's all now mapped out. I know how everything ends. But, initially, no, the plan was not to do a trilogy, especially for a debut novel to be the first of a trilogy was a lot to take on, but I'm really pleased with the results so far.
So you fell in love with the protagonist.
Yeah, with the protagonist and a number of the main characters, yes.
And the world.
Yeah. Oh, it's a kind of a scary world in a way that I created, because I really think a version of it really could come to pass.
Oh,
it makes us feel comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I've had a few people go, thank you. I haven't really been able to sleep some nights after reading your book. In a good way. Just in terms of the technology, because it's all about how we can be, we're already tracked and we're already watched to a degree. And I'm not sitting here with a tinfoil hat on, just so you know. But it's just right now, it's not as invasive as it could be. In 30 years from now, 25, 30 years from now, how invasive is it going to be? How much is it going to be where we're tracked and monitored and gauged and you know, manipulated in ways we don't realize, and it's all it where it gets out of our control, and we don't have a say with it anymore.
It is amazing when I, like, even on Facebook, if I go on, let's say, Amazon to buy something, next thing you know, on Facebook, all those things come up as advertising. It really is.
Well, not only that, but my wife and I were talking about going to Iceland. We were talking about what to go for a trip, and we want to go to Iceland. First time I then pull up Facebook and everything, Iceland trip ads.
Really?
Yeah. Never had a single ad for it. So, you know, Zuckerberg claiming that it doesn't listen? Yeah, don't believe it.
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know. Mine was showing me cock rings. I don't know what. I wasn't saying anything. But, you know, when you're doing a book like this, you know, of all seriousness, when you're doing this, you also, like, you, it sounds like the story's important. Like, you've got a story, you've built this big world, but your characters, your main character, has to have some sort of evolution, some sort of growth and change. So the story has to affect your character in a way that you want them to change, I would guess. How complicated is that to plan out?
It's really complicated because it's very easy to just go, okay, plot A, B, C, D, E happens. But if you don't have, one, characters you care about, and then two, the characters grow, you're not going to really care about the story as much. It's not going to resonate as much. And for me, it was very important to have that character element, and especially in this particular one, because with the first book, as it's shown in the first book, Dre, the main character, what really drives him is protecting his two daughters. And that relationship with them, and especially in that kind of a world where you're being so tracked and so monitored, and if something happens, how do you protect those you love? How do you protect your kids? How do you, you know, what do you do? And so then that evolves then into the second book, where he is now stepping into a larger role. He is now stepping into a larger fight and larger battle. And so he still then has that conflict between that larger battle and still wanting to protect his kids.
Even when you're protecting the kids, even if the kids have done something wrong, mm-hmm. is that a kind of an issue too?
Yeah, it is, because you still love your kids. Even if they do something wrong, you might go, well, you're an idiot for doing that, but you still want to protect them. So that is definitely a struggle with it.
Do you think about what you want your character to go through for growth or for as a character before kind of the setting or what you're going to have, the story itself?
Well, I still have, the way my mind works is I primarily do the main events, the main things that I want to happen in the story. But then my second thought is then how does that impact Dre? What is he, how does he respond? And frankly, sometimes he does things that I'm like, no, you really shouldn't, but it fits the character and it screws my story a little bit. But that's where it also gets really interesting, is the conflict and that balance between, you know, the fight per se, and then his internal fight and with the characters and how they drive him sometimes in ways that he didn't plan. And in fact, in this book, in The Price of Rebellion, there's a part where he is forced to make a choice between fighting the rebellion and chasing a desperate hope.
Now, when you get into the dialogue, now this is in the year 2047. So when you're doing dialogue, have you made some sort of, let's say, progression in language and let's say slang and stuff? Because, you know, we all have slang words now. People are, you know, they say things like heart, and they say things differently now than they did 10 years ago, and that there's different slang. Or do you kind of make up slang, or do you just avoid that?
I mostly avoided it. There's one of the characters that she kind of speaks a little bit in her own language. Actually, I take that back. There are two characters that kind of do. So I touched on it, but one, I'll admit that's not my strength. Two, it fit really for those specific characters. But then I didn't want it to negatively influence the story itself. Because if you throw too much slang and too many things, then at least for me as a reader, I have to stop and go, what does that mean? What is that? Does that make sense? So instead, I really want to make sure that the story flows and it works. And so having it for two of the characters, yes, but not for all of them. Because also I thought that might end up being really confusing.
Your technology, how do you go 20 years ahead?
A lot of research. Do a lot of research of what scientists are starting to create now, and what they're building on. In fact, one of the things that's kind of eerie is, so one of the pieces of technology they have is everyone has a small implant in their head. And with the second book, it starts with a timeline that kind of describes how that came to be. Well, now Elon Musk, he was, after I issued the first book, was talking about how he's working on this implant into people's heads and that kind of stuff. Well, that's just the very starting point of 25 years from now, it could be this much more advanced technological implant that really adds to people's lives and at the same time manipulates them.
So like AI, I mean, that's really intelligent computers.
An element of it. I don't have AI in this story. I kind of think that AI can be its own its own story or trilogy or nightmare. So, you know, you kind of pick your battles, right? So, you know, definitely want to make sure that this, I focus more on the technology and the surveillance and the monitoring and the tracking, that kind of surveillance, as well as some of the weaponry, some of the things on that side, which, you know, really some of the things are already kind of using drones for. And, you know, so I have an element of that in this as well. And I try to make sure there was nothing that was real stretch from where we could end up being.
So AI could be in the next book.
It really could. And I've already kind of dabbled. I'm like, do I not? But then is that more reactive to kind of what's going on? So I don't think it will, but there might be a little hint of it because that's starting to become part of our near future.
So I have a question about between when this happens and present, did you in your world have any kind of dramatic things happen? Not like maybe World War III, but some thing, events that they talk about or anything?
Yes, there are some major events, and that's where that timeline goes through some of the main events, because to have everyone adopt having a small implant in their head, that's a pretty big ask. And so some major events happen that set that stage as part of the world that we are in, which, you know, especially in light of, you know, having a global pandemic right after the release of the first book, you know, that, and I think this may be another unsettling kind of thought, but I think there might be worse bugs out there than COVID, and that could be much more deadly to humanity. And that's the dystopian in me, but it very well could. Now, will that happen? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
Right. Just don't use Michael's bathroom.
Nothing like use my toothbrush, right? Yeah.
Hey, that's okay, because I have that lavatory mist. It's called Jack the Ripper lavatory mist. I'm all set.
Okay, good.
And now creating a world, like when you, what's that process like when you create a world? Because you've obviously based it on, you know, our real world, but how do you take it in places that are different? Like, how do you decide what elements you're going to focus on?
It's mostly an element of what, for the most part, does serve the story. I mean, if I start talking about something that has absolutely nothing to do with the story, and that, okay, well, why is this author talking about it? So there is an element of it serves the overall story, but with it is also where I can kind of see taking certain elements, taking various, you know, past terrorist attacks, taking the pandemic, taking, also elements of, I think we are more blended as a race than we were 30, 50 years ago. I think that's going to continue going forward. So that is something that I also, you know, kind of, at least in my mind as I'm writing it, had more of a, you know, blended kind of, you know, characters. So it's elements of that. Yet at the same time, I also have some of the music in there that I hint at. One of the things, the main character, he likes the group Silver Sun Pickups, which, I don't know if you know them, but they're a good band, but they're, you know, they're popular now. Well, I listened to bands from 25, 30 years ago, so it didn't seem out of the realm to throw a song or two from them hinting at that in the first book, because, you know, it's not, we're not in silos. It's not like we're not going to listen to today's music 25 to 30 years. I mean, I did cheat a little bit. It's near future. It's 25 or so years from now. It's not 500 years from now and everyone is hanging out on the moon and all that stuff. It's relatable. And so that also, you know, I hope that allows the reader to dive into the story, have an element of the familiar as the story goes on.
Did you have something in mind you wanted the reader to take away from the book or from the series? Each one probably being a little different, each volume of the series, but is there something you wanted the reader to get, or was it just pure entertainment?
My main driver is entertainment, but there are underlying themes and that kind of thing. The first book, it was really about how technology can be used. It's, you know, it's a tool. It can be used for good or ill. And if we aren't careful, it could be used against us in ways we're not even aware of today. The second one, a major theme with it, is determining what and who that you can believe, which is a real struggle for the main character and some of the secondary characters as well as committing for a cause and the toll that that takes. I mean, there's some levity in it, and Dre has a love interest in the second one and that kind of thing, so it's not all heavy-handed and try to definitely have that balance, and especially a lot of action and all that, but there are those underlying themes, and you know, which I hope that the reader does take away from it.
You mean believing in certain things you hear, you don't know what to believe, gets worse?
Although everything on the internet is 100% true, so there's that.
Nothing about would wish for thinking
that. It's on TikTok, it's real.
Oh, that too.
Yes. So
it has to be. It's like law.
Did you get into that, like into online apps and what people are doing trending-wise, or you stay away from that totally?
I try to stay away from it, partly because every free moment that I have is pretty much with writing and editing. In fact, there are some books that I have set aside. I can't wait to start reading. After this third book, I'll actually take a short break and actually read a few of them. But I also know it's a very slippery slope. And, you know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and that I kind of limit myself to that, because the TikTok and the Twitter, I just feel like I could get down into such a rabbit hole where I'm no longer productive at all.
You already know how many books you're going to have in this series, or you're not sure yet?
Nope, it's a trilogy.
Oh, you know.
And okay. I know how it ends. I know what happens, everyone's fate. I think I have some really good twists in the second one. I think I have some really good twists in the third as well. And I'm really excited for to see how people react to the trilogy and the conclusion.
But you know, all trilogies have prequels too.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So then you got to do your prequel.
That's true. And then a sequel trilogy. That's true. the story is written. The world I've created. While I have that timeline, that's only like a 2-3 page timeline. There's a lot I can fill in on a prequel.
So this is going to be like Star Wars.
It could be, but no lightsabers, unfortunately.
But you could have completely different characters, but the same world.
Yeah. Really could. And I also then have had a thought about the sequel, a book after the trilogy with at least one of the characters from this trilogy. But we'll see. I mean, right now, I want to make sure that I stick the landing, you know, especially with the third book. Coming back to the original Matrix, my personal thing is the first one was great, the second one was decent, the third almost ruined the whole thing. So I definitely want to avoid that kind of, that's just my own opinion. I definitely want to make sure that I don't do that with this, because I think that it has a lot of potential. So
that same thing like the Dune, the first Dune was the best, then it got worse.
Right. Yeah, so I definitely want to avoid that. And with this one, if it's a sign in the right direction, it actually recently won Best Science Fiction Novel of the Year by Indies Today. So that was a really nice award to get.
Well, how do you avoid that? I mean, when you say that, you know, the first one, second one's good, then the third one, oh my God, and Dune, second one, ooh. You know, there's all these things like that. How do you avoid that? And what is it that you need to avoid? Like, how come it becomes so bad, or what wrecks a series?
Oh, I don't know. And actually, I think I almost did this, but I had a really good beta reader. Actually, my dad, when he first read the draft for this, the second one, he's like, look, the first chapter is great. The next 40 pages, I didn't care. I was like, ouch. Well, what happened was looking back and reading it. Yeah, thanks, Dad. But
is that when you poisoned his dinner?
Yeah. No, I just ran over his foot. No, but he was right, though, because what I was doing was I started to create this side subplot that I thought might be interesting, and it wasn't. It distracted from the story, and so that was a really good lesson for me to remember, not only when I redid that whole section, and now it's way so much better, but then with the third book is, and I'm also, like I said, I have the whole thing plotted out, but I'm going back right now, and I'm kind of putting myself through the ringer. Does this work? Does this make sense? Is this as good as it could be? All of that before I start writing it at all, just to try to avoid it. I don't have a magic answer. I just know, you know, some of the things that have been bad, and also, you know, listening to your beta readers is a huge part.
So that's your magic, is Dad. So that's your magic.
He is a big part of the magic, yes. And he, you know, I love him. He did not pull any punches, and it's what I needed. And so it's, and he's not the only one. My sister's been fantastic. This guy, Robert Kerbeck, is a fellow writer. He's a successful nonfiction writer. And fiction. And we'll go back and forth through chapters, and he gives me blunt, great notes, just to help elevate it. For any writers out there listening, one of the biggest things, get someone who will not pull any punches and will tell you everything that's good and everything that's bad. That doesn't mean that everything they say is going to be correct in terms of what, what they say works and doesn't work. And usually what it is what they say doesn't work is correct, but their solution may not be right.
Right.
So that's the challenge, that you then have to know what part to listen to and what not. But that doesn't mean ignore it. It's just usually about 90-95% of what they say is correct.
I still say Father knows best, so it sounds like he's doing his job.
He is. He is definitely doing his job.
That's only because you have 20 kids.
I stopped at 18. What are you trying to say? The last two look like the mailman. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, but who pays for them?
yeah.
Well, you know, I think the idea is when someone reads and gives you their opinion like that, your dad or the beta readers, the idea is to make you think.
Mm-hmm.
It brings attention to something, and then you think about it. And sometimes you figure out where to go, and sometimes it doesn't need changing. But it's just, it gives you a realization of what someone might think when they're reading your book, right?
Exactly. And in a point of view that you didn't think of, you're like, why did you even come up with that? But it made you,
yeah,
she stopped to go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I need to express it this way. Maybe I need to change this.
Because you must be surprised. I know I am at times at what some readers will pick out in your story, and how they'll think it's being told. Like they have a totally different mindset of what they think you're telling them, or mm-hmm, what's happening in the story than what you intended. You must get some real, being a science fiction writer, you must get some real weird suggestions.
Oh, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I love everyone because it becomes a really interesting conversation. And I love that it's impacting enough to that they're taking something out of it and that they're excited about something with it. The worst reaction is, oh yeah, I read your book and I don't remember a thing about it, right? So luckily I've not had that. At least no one said that to me.
Well, actually, I read your book and...
Boy, did I set you up.
But yeah. Listen, so we talk a little bit about what you don't like, but in a series that goes wrong, or maybe, what is it you like about science fiction book?
Oh, that's a great question. I love the surprise, but it has to be earned. You know, the surprise that, whoa, where, I didn't realize that was going to happen, and then when you stop and think about it, you're like, oh, the author did kind of set enough of the stage so it does... That it works, but it surprised me. And that also makes me think about the world a little bit differently.
And hence the thriller part aspect of it.
Yeah, that's true. I definitely gravitate towards thrillers. The ones where, you know, a character sits around and just, you know, sips coffee and contemplates life. No, that's not the kind of story that I like. And I'm also very aware that in this day and age especially, I'm fighting for your attention with everything, with the internet, with podcasts, with... you know, TikTok, with everything. So I need to grab your attention and hold it.
Oh, and podcasts are terrible.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, they're terrible. It's just awful.
Yeah, some people.
Do you think about, how do I say this? Are you conscious of how you write violence and the sex in the story on the page? Are you thinking about how you place it and what you actually dictate in those circumstances?
I'm definitely not the type that I'm, you know, do violence and gore. And there's violence, but I try to have it that it's every single thing is for a reason. Definitely don't do it just because. I'm talking about some heavy things and fighting and, you know, life and death type of thing. So violence is a part of it. But it's also part of life to a degree, unfortunately. And in, you know, places, it's more so than others and more than we might want. But so I'm trying to reflect life as it is. As far as the sex part, if it is part of it, then great. You know, also I don't throw, you know, sex in just because, even though, hey, sex is always great. Who needs an excuse, right? But in terms of a story, you definitely want to try to, you know, you want to make sure that it is there for a purpose, for a reason.
Right, because you want it to be, it's got to make sense to the story.
It everything has to serve the story. If sex doesn't serve the story, then you don't have it. If it does, then you have it.
Well, you'd be like Mike and have it anyway.
Well, that's just because I say yes to her, because I'm afraid of her.
That's right. Yeah. So the evil characters, how is it that you write them, and how do you come up with them? The people that do the bad things, and the same time as when you're writing and thinking about them, how do you explain, or do you find it important to explain why they feel and do the things they do?
You definitely want to give, or for me, for me, the best villains are ones that have a reason. And for them, they're the heroes of their own story. They don't think they're bad. They don't think that they're, you know, they might do things that, okay, that not everyone would potentially do, but gee, that's why I'm on this wall, or that's why I am, you know, serving this role, because it's dirty work, has to be done, but I'm a hero because I am doing this for what I think are the right reasons. And those, to me, are the most interesting villains, because you could, hopefully, if it's done right, you could empathize with them, or at least understand why they're doing it. You may not agree, but you can understand. And that's the most interesting part to me.
Yeah, because I think you'll like, you know, the characters, even though they're bad or doing bad things, if you can understand them, if you understand where they're coming from.
Yes, and if I can have a personal element to it, then that also just then elevates it a little more. It adds more conflict, more struggle between, especially the main character and the antagonist, if there's a personal element to it as well.
So do you use people and ones you've met or know or acquaintances in your book as characters?
I try not to. I'm sure subconsciously I do. You know, it's right? I mean, you almost can't, you know, especially if you run into someone and they have some quirk or trait, or you're like, oh man, this guy's really cool, or, you know, this woman is fascinating to talk to. Well, you want to try to get characters that are like that. So there's definitely an element with that, but I don't, the only one that I really consciously crafted to a degree out of real, you know, out of someone alive or previously alive, was the main character Dre, who he was inspired by my two grandfathers, because they were both engineers. One was a metallurgist, and in fact was one of the best in the world at the time. And he tried to, after Pearl Harbor, tried to enlist in the army, and was turned down when they discovered his skills, and he ended up helping build battleships. My other grandfather was a chemical engineer, and he also tried to enlist after Pearl Harbor, was also turned down because of his skills, and ended up at a bomb-making factory down in Texas during the war.
Oh.
Yeah. My grandmother said that she kept waiting to hear a boom in the distance of, you know, the factory blowing up, because it was so, you know, dangerous. But those two, I massively admire them, what they did both during the war and in their careers and what they did. And so they were both my inspiration with Dre.
So which evil character did you, you know, style after Robert Kirkbeck?
Well, you know, he might be listening to this.
Well, I'll send it to him.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Cause I know he's been on as well. So I plead the fifth. But I did have one after a guy who has a podcast. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know which one that one is. Well,
the old one.
Yeah, the old one. Snatched the beans from my hand. It is tight.
That's right.
That's an old thing, you know, getting too old. Now, when you say thriller, what is it that's thriller to you? Do you actually let the reader know the bad thing that's happened, but, you know, they don't, the good guys in the story don't know it? Is it that kind of thriller?
No, it's more thriller in terms of pace, in terms of action, in terms of events that happen. To me, that's more of the thriller aspect to it. It's more sci-fi.
How do you decide what rules apply?
I make it up as I go along.
I guess you can, right? You
know. That is one benefit of being the author. Of course, until my publisher, then their editor gets a hold of it. No, you can't do that. Kind of.
So it has to make sense.
Absolutely has to make sense. And that's one of my big things. And I'm sure you, as well as the listeners, have all had at least one or two stories you read, and you're going along and, okay, it's fine. And then the author makes some leap and you're like, what? No, she can't suddenly fly or whatever. Right? And I hate those. It always throws me out of the story. So I really, that's a big reason also why I outline ahead of time, is I want to make sure with this world that I've created and the rules that are in it, that everything that happens, it makes sense. And hopefully I've surprised you a few times, but even after it happens, it still makes sense, and I've justified it all.
Well, how do you distinguish between, there's so many brands of science fiction now, and we've interviewed hard science fiction writers who are really intense, and we've done a lot of fantasy mm-hmm. and urban fantasy, and there's all these variances, and they're all, to me, because I'm old enough, and even Michael would be, that, you know, the old science fiction kind of included all of it. Now there's all these subcategories. Mm-hmm. How do you yourself decide what is what and where you go?
It really was dictated by the world that I created for the first book. So everything else stems from that. I mean, if suddenly in the second one, a alien spaceship lands, no, you're going to throw the book across the room. Like, no, you didn't introduce aliens. This isn't a story dealing with aliens. So there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, there's some great stories out there. I'm just saying my trilogy is based on the world that I created. And so it goes back to those rules. If you then start breaking those rules, it doesn't work. If I suddenly introduce time travel, that also, no, that doesn't fit in this story. Doesn't mean I won't write a story dealing with time travel, but that won't be this trilogy, that kind of thing.
So how do you create your dialogue? Like, do you hear your characters in your head? Do you play it back in your mind? Or how is the dialogue written?
I try to have everyone have a slightly different voice, because if they all have the same voice, all speaking patterns, then it doesn't flow.
It's boring. Yeah.
Right. So I definitely, there's some that they're in that do kind of speak in my head. In fact, two of the characters, the ones with the kind of slang we were talking about earlier, those just left my, I just started typing, and suddenly I'm like, what the heck did I just write? Because these characters just like took over, which is crazy, but it fit. And it also, they leap off the page even more as a result. A couple others, the way their cadences, the way that they talk, some of them will be just normal sentence, the way they'll say it slightly different, not as bad as like Yoda does, but you know what I'm saying? Some element that it's like, okay, just slightly different, and just helps differentiate the different characters. It just, in my mind, how someone speaks also reflects some of their character. Someone who speaks in big, highfalutin words is going to be different than someone else who, you know, drawls and hey, y'all, and, you know, every other third word is a curse word. Right? It's just that reflects of someone's character and the way they are. So I try to use that as well to help give.
Wow. So when they come in and take over, do they still let you drive?
No.
No. Are you waking up in the middle of the night with a shovel by your bed?
Well, you know, that's why I try to be kind to them, you know. But it's funny because one of them, this guy Garley, who was originally just a very minor character in the first book, but when I then started to have him speak, he just leapt off his page in terms of how he would speak and what he did and everything else. And so I brought him back into the second book because he was so much fun and it fit also with the story. And so I was glad. It was really fun to be able to bring him back.
Or do these characters sometimes, they're so strong that they actually go off the rails, they take control of what they want to do in their story?
A little bit. I try, since I plot it all out, I'm able to rein them in to a degree, but no, sometimes they start to go, and I'm like, no, or I go, wait a minute, maybe I can play with this and add it in and help them. And, like, for example, that guy Garley, you know, he became such a bigger character, and in the second book, he plays a pretty good-sized role in it as a result.
What an interesting process, you know.
Interesting, frustrating at times.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you ever, what does it do for you? So when you complete, like you've got book two now, it's done, it's out, and so what does it do for you? How has it changed you?
It has given me a huge sense of accomplishment to be able to not only write a book, but to get it, to have a publisher publish it, and then to get such positive feedback. First of all, it makes you go, oh, okay, maybe actually I can write. You don't know. There's not like there's a tribunal that says, okay, you have passed. You are now officially a writer kind of thing.
Oh, they didn't invite you?
Oh, there is one. So there's definitely that element of it, and it's something that I love it. It speaks to my soul. It's just, this is, if I win the lottery tomorrow, this is all I'm doing is writing. Well, I'm traveling, but writing.
Yeah.
So screw the day job. Go right to writing.
Oh, see you, bye. You know, see you, done.
You know, like that person that wins that $100 million and they go, oh, I'm just going to keep on working.
Yeah, no, that means I have good day job and I really, you know, I have some great people I work with, but see you, bye. Nope, I'm out. And they actually know that too. They know that. They're like, we really hope your new book doesn't do well because you're afraid you're just going to quit and work full time.
So how about screenplays then?
That is another area I would love. I've talked with my publisher about it. The thing is, she's thinking that, the main publisher, the person I talk with, that she's thinking that my series works better as like a limited series, like on Netflix or Prime, only because she's like, if you realize that, hey, if they make a movie out of it, they're just going to have to cut a lot of stuff. So I would not mind either, really. My biggest thing is I just want to make sure it's good quality, you know, that it's not, you know, someone that is, you know, you can see something in the background with strings hanging there, you know, the CGI is really bad, you know, that kind of thing, that, you know, the dialogue right. is suddenly painful. You know, I just want that whatever it is, it becomes, that it's well done.
But it's a good time because a lot of that streaming, you can binge watch.
Yeah.
Binge watch. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think my story, especially the first two and the third one as well, if it goes as I plan, I think it really would work well as like a limited series. And then honestly, they could, hey, if they want to buy the rights, they can then continue on and script the ending like Game of Thrones, the last season.
I know it.
Right, again, speaking of landing. The landing was so important, yes.
I mean, Game of Thrones was so great, and then boom.
And they just rushed it. Like, why? No one else wanted to rush it. Why did you?
Yeah, but I think that's something you're going to have to realize, that in the business, that's what goes on. That's just what happens. Because they quite often do one season, one series, and then if it's really done well and everybody takes to it really well, then you're stuck with doing another one. So they take a lot of creative process on their own.
Oh, I can't imagine. I'm sure they're just like, we're done. We've had too many seats, like what, 8 seasons? And they're just, we want to do something else. So I don't blame them, but why, you know, too bad they couldn't just like hand it off to someone else. But I know that's way easier said than done.
Yeah, yeah. There's always a lot of investors and money behind it. So it just ends up going wherever they want it to go.
And they didn't call me, so, you know, I have no say.
Yeah, that's usually what happens, you know.
Maybe they just didn't have my number.
Well, tell people, listen, he's looking for a screenplay, and he's looking for to be on one of the networks. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Or it's too late.
Writing, I enjoyed writing my own screenplay on one of mine.
Yeah.
And I see that you've been doing some editing as well. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you'd enjoy writing a screenplay.
I've thought about it. I know it's a different beast, though, right? It's a different way of...
Present tense, I remember that one. No past tense.
No past tense.
All present tense.
and you have you describe some of the setting, but you also leave room for the director to kind of do their own thing and all that, from what I understand. That's kind of the extent of it. So right now I'm sticking to the third book, and really, like I said, I want to make sure to get the third book as strong and as well done as possible. Then we'll see. And if it's an element of, hey, we want to, you know, option your stories, but you know, we want your, you know, input with the screenplay or once you start working on it, okay, you know, I'm more than willing. But right now, I guess, you know, I'm kind of, before I get too distracted, I first just want to focus on, you know, getting this one out so that people know about it, and then getting book three done.
No, in order. And plus, you know, when they do contact you, I am really busy, but if they really insist, I can play the lead.
Okay, that's good to know. I was going to ask, so.
Yeah, throw my name at them, and they'll be like, oh, we're on it.
Yeah, where well, we I'm sure they already have your number, so.
Yeah. Dre Warren, there it is.
Yes.
Yeah. They'll be on it like, I'm telling you, this just will not, they'll be all over it. They'll want to sign you up for everything you're going to write from now on.
All right, good. Glad to hear it. And you can be the main character.
Yeah, I'm the main character. I'm the old lady that gets killed in the episode.
She gets pushed down and ate by a dragon. That's me.
Well, you're a character, so.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Cameo role.
I'm in there, and that's all that matters, you know.
Can't take that away, yes.
No, please. So where can people find you, your website, your books, your social media?
Yep, absolutely. MCBland.com. That is my website. That's the main area. You can sign up for my newsletter that way. You can see about the novels and what I have going on. I have a blog on there that I admit I've been really bad about writing recently because I've been so focused on the book. Also, I'm, like I said, on Instagram at MCBland107. I'm also on Facebook. You can look for me there. And love to be in touch with everyone.
Yeah, well, we'll make sure everything's up on the website so people can find it with one click.
That'd be great.
You know, make it easy for everyone. So you must have been writing this complete book over the pandemic.
Yeah.
How was that? Was it, because I know a lot of writers we talked to, it was like, yeah, not a problem. I like to be alone anyway, and I don't care. And I see that. But because you're writing kind of dystopian sort of world and science fiction and stuff, did the events affect the mood of the setting of what you were writing, you think?
Yeah, it did. It did. Now, as I mentioned, I wrote actually the rough draft right before the pandemic, which had good and bad to it. Because once the pandemic started, my day job, I had to put the book aside. I mean, I put it aside for like 6 months. So when I first pulled it out, it was almost like someone else had written it. So I was able to get a better perspective, then, especially after Dad's comments. But it did also, as I was going back and rewriting it, as well as editing it and adding to it, it definitely did add a darker element, darker tone to it. And frankly, during the pandemic, it was freaking me out a little bit. I'm like, I could have written something like this. Except not as lame. I mean, this big pandemic and I barely am out of my sweatpants the whole time. I mean, it's like, wow, I'm, near the end of the world and, I've got my sweatpants and my, Star Wars t-shirt. Wow, that's really...
Well, more comfortable.
It is more comfortable, but, at the same time, it's not like I'm, leading some kind of, I'm not Mad Max going across the desert in a,
right.
Big-ass car. Yeah. So there's definitely...
Now, this sounds silly, but for someone my age, mm-hmm. I was thinking that people acted really strangely, like the whole society seemed to be weird. You had some guy yelling at the lady at the front of Costco because he wouldn't wear a mask, and he had all this stuff going on, and it was really tense. Mm-hmm. And that, I didn't expect that kind of behavior. You know what I mean? Like this behavior that was going on was kind of really shocking.
It was revelatory, wasn't it? Because it showed different sides of people, because this was something that, at least as far as I'm aware, no one's ever experienced. No one's ever had where the entire economy is in essence shutting down, and we're such social creatures and stay at least 6 feet apart and wear masks and don't touch and slather your body and
Well, I'm getting excited.
but what I'm saying about really being distant from each other and being very aware, and then you have some areas of the country that, no, we're going to throw up, don't wear a mask, and other areas that do, and a disjointed, you would have thought, if you would have asked me 5 years before the pandemic, I would have thought that we would have come together as people, because especially if I look after 9/11.
Like 9/11,
yeah. 9/11, we all came together, it seemed like that there was, at least for a brief period of time, we were all on the same side. We were all with the same goal. And the pandemic didn't show a different side, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, and what I think is, I don't know that... Because you write these types of books, you're into this science fiction area. Mm-hmm. If you wrote that in a book, let's say the pandemic never happened and we haven't lived it, or it's 1995 or whatever you right. want to do it... Right. And you wrote a book about a pandemic hitting, and you wrote the stories of the unrest and the way that we saw it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would kind of go, oh, yeah, that's not believable.
Right.
You're
absolutely right.
That's kind of what freaks me out, because it almost seems unreal.
It's because we also want, as in general, I think we all want to hope the best for each other. And then we would hope that we would all rise as a people to the best of ourselves. But of course, that's not the reality. And that's why to write a fiction book that would reflect that, I think would be a very tough sell, or at least not really popular, because how many people would want to read that there were reactions the way that they actually were?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of it. Because in fiction, you can always kind of satisfy the reader and even yourself by having justice served, so to speak, or, you know, have an ending that's at least hopeful, right? You can at least have some justice served against the evil people in the story. But
right.
In the real life, I guess it just doesn't always happen that way. And so we're kind of in that limbo. I was just wondering if you, in the middle of it, if it would kind of make it darker. That's all. That's kind of an interesting concept.
Yeah, and there are definitely, as when your listeners read the end of the book, it's, you know, that doesn't, there is a darker element to it.
Right.
But again, and honestly, I think one thing that helped is I did already have it all planned out though before. Because if I had started writing the second book after the pandemic started, and I started from that standpoint, I think to where you're going to go with this, I think it would have been a much darker. And honestly, probably a much more, judgmental towards people in general, just because I had really hoped that as a society, we would have responded better than we did. And trust me, I'm not saying that I was any angel by any means. I'm human like any...
No, I saw you screaming at those ladies at the drugstore.
They won't get out of my way. No, I'm just kidding. but it's just... I think it worked out the way that it did, in the best way, at least for...
Well, not only that, you know, when you talk to historians, you start finding out about the first pandemic, it was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were cities that would declare no masks and other ones that did. And, of course, there was lots of problems back then, too. We just don't know about it because we weren't around.
Well, or just never stopped to go back and read about it. I mean,
right.
Why would in 2016, would someone have been like, gee, what was the last pandemic like? Why don't we go back and read? I mean... Why would you, per se, unless you were going to write a book about a pandemic?
Yeah, it's strange, you know. But it sure opened my eyes now to people. That's all. It's
just different.
Yeah. I'm more cautious now, you know, especially of sci-fi writers.
Yeah, you can't trust those guys at all.
No, they're the ones you got. They got that shifty look.
Or do they know something you don't?
Yeah, they've got that look in their eye that they plan something and don't. Don't let them out of your sight.
Al, remember, he can put you in his book and off you.
That's true.
That's been done before. But if you do, make sure it's really painful and it's long and torturous.
And it's kind of an epic blaze of glory to go out in.
Yeah.
Chapter.
I want to bleed out for the whole book.
For an entire chapter. Oh, you want the whole book?
Sure. Oh, okay. At the beginning of the book, I'm caught and strung up. And each chapter, you just mentioned how a little more is let out, and they burn something else, and they tortured something else, and by the end,
William Wallace him.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking more like a Holy Grail, but I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, not dead. Just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
Feeling better.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that is classic. There you go.
Right there, we got it.
Well, what can I say, Michael? It's always a pleasure talking to you. And the new book, of course, is called The Price of Rebellion, and it's The Price of Trilogy Book 2. And Michael C. Bland is the author, and it's been our guest, so thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, Alan, Mike, thank you for having me on. It's great to be back.
Nice speaking with you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.